Fiction, they are often cast as the enemy. Here, a team's survival lies in their balance. A competition, teaming America's brightest young minds with cutting-edge technology. Robots are built to withstand virtually anything. Humans are not. In this arena, minor malfunctions can lead to major heartbreaks.
Oh my god, her battery's going down.
Pumps of blood. Stop that, dead.
This is not science fiction. This is not man versus machine.
This is first.
Please welcome the founder chairman of Boston Scientific Corporation and chairman of the board of FIRST, Mr. John Abele.
Greetings from Manchester, New Hampshire, and welcome to the 14th FIRST Robotics Competition Kickoff. There are 31 sites who are connected to us today. You can see them in the sign there, everything from Anchorage, Alaska to Annana, Israel, from Toronto to Brazil. This is truly an international as well as a national competition. We welcome the 183 rookie teams and the 807 veteran teams, 1,800 next year. We have added 4 new regionals this year, which brings the total to 30. And finally, of course, the championship in Atlanta. We are grateful to NASA for enabling this broadcast to all of you being able to get all this information to you at the same time is just an incredible privilege. Thank you to NASA. We also want to thank the suppliers and the supporters who have made this possible. The extraordinary collaboration that makes FIRST is one of the strongest assets we have. And thank you also to the volunteers and board members all around the country now. Many of the board members are actually in the regional sites working with those programs. Before we proceed any further, I want to take a second simply to express our heartfelt concern to the victims of the tsunami in Southeast Asia. It is hopeful that someday the knowledge that you get out of this experience will contribute to solving these problems, whether it's alerting the people of the tsunami in the first place or providing clean water, and so forth. Our heartfelt concern goes out to them. A reminder, the first competition is about more than robots. It is, of course, about people. It's about learning to work together. It's about working together towards a shared goal, doing teamwork. It's about finding and using each individual's unique talent to make the project team greater than the sum of its parts. It's about applying skills that will lead to success in whatever you do in life. In keeping with those values, FIRST highest awards are not about machines. It is about people. The ultimate FIRST prize is the Chairman's Award, and it goes to the team that best exemplifies that partnership. Teams that have won the Chairman's Award are our role models. They're the role models for transforming culture into one that honors science and technology and people. To celebrate the success of Chairman's Awards teams, we have inducted those teams into the FIRST Hall of Fame. 9 teams have earned the right to be inducted. As opposed to other halls of fame, the FIRST Hall of Fame, those teams remain active in our cause and serve as examples for others to follow. We have now the list of the Hall of Famers on your screen. And we are honored to have representatives from 2 of those teams here in Manchester today. From Los Angeles, the 2001 Chairman's Award winner, Team 22, High Tech High, Los Angeles, and Chatsworth High School, students are Aaron Haas and Michael Puente. And also from Connecticut, the 2002 Chairman's Award winner, Team 175, Buzz Robotics, United Technologies, Hamel and Sunshine, Space Land and Sea, Enrico Fermi High School, students are Gary St. Amant and Halambos Zaharis. Thank you, folks, for coming here and acting as examples for all of us. And now, what you've all been waiting for, or at least a hint at it, let's take a brief look at some of the game elements which you will learn more about in the coming minutes. The shape that's been chosen is the polyhedron of 4 faces, a tetrahedron. From the side, of course, you can see that it is a triangle, which is the red symbol in the FIRST logo. The first time, I believe, Dean, that we have introduced this triangle. About time. The shape is really lightweight, and yet it's really strong. It's pretty interesting what one can do with a shape like this. We'll find out more about how central these pieces are to this year's FIRST game as we move along. FIRST has worked very hard to make sure that this field and these pieces are inexpensive and easy to assemble. Here's an example of just how easy it really is.
We're going to look at how easy it is to build a tetra. It starts off with a piece of PVC end cap that you put a hole in it. In the kit, there's some specially designed tetra clovers. Your bolt fits in into the hole, and then your nut fits right inside the PVC end cap. Twist, 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 and we've got the start of your PVC tetra end piece. We've now fully assembled 4 of these end pieces. They just go right onto our PVC pipe. Get them all in there really nice and good, and we're going to take that and just stretch it on out. Now we just need to repeat the process 4 more times. Put it in, get it nice and tight, stretch it out. Now for our superstructure, just going to load it in, stretch it out. Now for the next corner, you're going to need some help to pull that back and get your superstructure up nice and high. One more piece. One more piece, and you've got yourself a game field element.
Please welcome the executive director of FIRST, Mr. Paul Shea.
To the FIRST Robotics Competition, we are also very, very proud of the FIRST LEGO League, which offers the FIRST experience to young people aged 9 to 14. FLL has had an amazing season this year with the No Limits Challenge. Teams explored the use of technology in assisting people with physical challenges, as you can see in this short video.
This past September, the film Freedom Machines showed us how the power of technology can change lives for people with disabilities. It was the combined work of prestigious organizations including PBS and the Sundance Institute. At the same time, 6,000 FIRST LEGO League teams from 20 countries around the globe learned the power of this message through the 2004 FIRST LEGO League Challenge, No Limits. FIRST, in partnership with the LEGO Company, designs real-world challenges each year for teams of kids ages 9 through 14. In this year's No Limits Challenge, teams built and programmed robots to perform activities of daily living that many people take for granted. Bringing a tray of food to a table, playing a sport, moving and retrieving objects, or climbing stairs. All of these tasks can pose special challenges for people with physical disabilities. As part of the No Limits Challenge, teams had to create solutions utilizing assistive technology and demonstrate how it can make a difference for individuals with physical limitations within their communities. Teams made formal presentations of their design to a panel of judges. Some of these creative ideas are now being considered for implementation, and a few even for patents. FLL teams, solving problems, change.
The FLL Challenge is Ocean Odyssey. The FLL teams will use science and technology to better understand the world's oceans. The importance of enhancing such understanding has been underlined in a very tragic manner by the terrible loss associated with the tsunami in the Indian Ocean. We appreciate how many FRC teams are mentoring FLL teams and even taking on the task of organizing an FLL event. Your efforts make a tremendous difference, and we thank you for that. Speaking of mentors, we also send our deep thanks to all the extraordinary mentors and teachers who make FRC what it is. We realize how much work is involved in supporting an FRC team, and that this can be an especially big job for teachers, most of whom are already way too busy. We know that there is more to FRC than building a robot. It is a very much a complex exercise in project management, which entails a lot of work that doesn't really require a technical or engineering background. There are many examples of FIRST parents, alumni, and others who don't have a technical background, but who are helping with these non-technical roles. This can greatly ease the load of the teachers and the other mentors. I encourage teams to think about how you can share the work in this way. If you're interested in learning more about involving non-technical mentors, please join the NEMO forum following the instructions posted on the FIRST website. Now, NEMO stands for Non-Engineering Mentor Organization, and it's made up of a group of grassroots mentors from FIRST who are interested in helping share this information. You don't have to be an engineer to help FIRST, and NEMO can show you the way. Participation in FIRST Robotics Competition gives students access to a growing list of scholarships currently valued at about $5 million. We are grateful for the generosity of the schools and sponsors who make these scholarships available. This year, close to 65 of the top universities in the US and Canada are part of the program. A growing number of scholarships are sponsored by corporations such as Raytheon Company and Mercedes-Benz. Scholarships are also sponsored by professional associations, such as the American Society of Mechanical Engineers and the Society of Women Engineers. We hope you'll take the time to apply for these scholarships. Please consult the FIRST website for the most current information. And now, let's go back to this year's game. John introduced you to the large Tetris, And here I have a smaller one that's going to play a very important role in this year's game. You're going to learn a little bit more about that later on. But here, let me show you how we add elements one on top of the other, as is often the case in FIRST programs. More about that later.
And now please welcome the FIRST founder, Mr. Dean Kamen.
Greetings, thank you. So, everything's changing this year. Our format's changing, and the real boss, Kate Strauss, somewhere around here, told me, Dean, your role has changed this year. You don't thank everybody. All the other speakers are doing that. You don't explain most of the game. Other people do that. She said, you've got to get up and do two things. Explain why we're always changing, innovation, and maybe say a few things about what doesn't change. So why do we change the game every year? Because FIRST is a microcosm of life. That's what we set out to do, show kids what the real world is like, what the opportunities are like. But in the real world, everything changes, whether we like it or not. The tsunami changed a lot of things for a lot of people. They couldn't plan it. FIRST is about giving you the tools to deal with change. It's about giving you the tools to guide the change, to make a world where we help determine the results. We'd have no choice, by the way, to the veterans. We have to change. We couldn't keep them. If you're a rookie here and you're excited, it's the first time, next year you won't be a rookie. You'll be looking for growth, opportunities, new challenges. So I'm not here to apologize in any way for the fact that the game changes every year. Quite the contrary. But I do want to start by recognizing that over the years, let's be brutally honest, we are building two polarized camps. Sometimes I think they're armed camps. They're in one extreme, the returning veterans, some now have played for more than a decade. We need more sensors. We need higher power. We need a bigger challenge. We need software. We need autonomous node. We need feedback. We've got rookies. How can we possibly do this in 6 weeks? We need some support. And every year, this little train that we put on the track 14 years ago is moving faster and faster and faster. And it's unquestionably a lot harder to jump on a train after it's moving than if you got there when it started. How do we deal with that? It's really hard. This year we not only changed the game, again, because it's about creativity and problem solving, not optimizing one solution year after year like in most sports. We've even changed dramatically, really dramatically, the kit to try to deal with the issues that are inevitable due to our growth, due to the huge dichotomy now that exists between people that have played for 14 years and people that are here for the first time. And for instance, why couldn't we make a kit that allows a rookie to, quote, keep the wheels on a little easier and worry about other problems at the same time we give some of the people that have played many years the opportunity to get more sensors and use more technology? In a few minutes, we're going to show you that I think we've done that. Woody, Dave Lavery, Vince Wislinski have worked really, really hard this year to try to give this huge, very, very broad dichotomy and everybody in between the opportunity to play at any level and succeed, everybody, I think, will see this year that you're going to get out there and you're going to build a machine that you'll be proud of, and the number of opportunities to push the limits and reach new challenges are way larger than they ever were. There are certain things about FIRST, however, that I don't think have ever changed. To those of you that have heard me say this all before, consider it a booster shot. To those of you that are new, I think it's important to remember that while the game looks bigger, maybe more intimidating, it's changing. The purpose of FIRST couldn't be more the same and more focused. You heard John Abele say, we're not about building robots. From the very first year, to me, the robot, no pun intended, was just a vehicle. What we're really building is relationships between young people and serious adults that in many cases wouldn't exist without a vehicle like this. We have a culture that celebrates incessantly certain kinds of role models. You can't look around this room and not see how we feel about athletes. You can't turn on television and not see how we feel about the world of entertainment. Where do young people learn about the possibilities to participate in solving the world's problems, in creating meaningful careers? Where do they learn what they can really do, what's really accessible to people that work hard at trying to understand important problems and trying to understand how to develop the tools to solve those problems? FIRST is about giving kids an opportunity to make informed decisions about what they're going to do with their lives. So those rookies that think, well, you know, you didn't do it for me, Dean, with that story about we'll make the kids better, it's still unfair to us. We're coming in late. FIRST is about showing you that even that is a real, real microcosm of the world. You can come into our program a little late and catch up. In the real world, what if you get to 17 or 18 and you've spent your life dreaming about Hollywood or the NBA? That train's really moving. The train of your career opportunities is really moving. What if you try to jump on that one as a rookie with no skills, no technical understanding of the world around you? How are you going to be an informed citizen, a responsible adult? The world isn't about entertainment and pastimes. This world's, just look at it. I've said it for 14 years. I think the world is in a race between education and catastrophe. Lately, we've seen a few of the catastrophes winning. The next generation on this planet is going to be dealing with the most intricate, complex set of issues and fragile technologies. If we understand them and use them right, technologies could be sweeping through Sri Lanka now, bringing back power and water and health and happiness and stability and quality of life. With 6 or 7 billion people on the planet, when the young people that are doing this take over, if most of them aren't capable of dealing with technology, understanding it, advancing it, we probably won't be bringing quality of life and stability and security and happiness. The world will be going the other way. I think FIRST is a really, really good model for you to think about the world. And if you're one of those rookies getting in now, think of it as a wake-up call. It's a fun way to get on the train. If you're a returning veteran, you got to help all the rookies. And let's not argue about whether the game is one or the other. If it's done right, this game can represent opportunity for everybody. In fact, I would urge every mentor, typically I don't have the students listening when I talk to them at a kickoff, but I guess the students ought to hear the same message. I'd urge the mentors to try to remember as often as possible, it doesn't mean a damn thing whether your robot wins or loses. They are and will always be just the vehicle. Gracious professionalism is our theme. It hasn't changed in 14 years. Celebrating what's important hasn't changed and won't change. The idea that at the end of the season, some of the robots will break. Some of them will lose. That's okay. That's actually a good thing. It makes the game exciting. But by the end of the season, everybody that's participated in FIRST should be a winner. Everybody. Every kid that participates should at least understand a new set of options, should look at the world in a slightly different way. Every mentor should come away charged up that they've done something important that'll help change the course of our culture. We now are getting to a scale where we will start to see the impact of FIRST changing our culture. And we ought to make sure we're changing it in a positive way. We should make sure that in the end, 3 or 4 or 5 years from today, you might not remember which robot won and which robot lost. But we're all going to remember something about this event that made an important positive difference in how people act, how they treat each other, how they make choices, where they devote their time and their effort and their energy to meaningful things. They certainly won't give me the time to go through the litany of reasons I think FIRST is so special. I'm hoping that the veterans out there that have heard me year after year will remember that there, with our extraordinary growth, are a lot of people, mentors included, engineers, parents, teachers, and mostly kids. Even on the returning teams, there are new waves of kids that need to continually be reminded what we're really doing here. And at the end of the season, I would tell you that everybody wants to win. I think, again, John Abele said it best when he said, we're about building communities, not robots. When he said, it's about the chairman's award, the founder's award. We made great effort. And those chairman's winners, the criteria for winning, that never changes. It's very stable. We want, by the end of the season, everybody to think that their efforts to win the chairman's award, their efforts to help and change their community are what we came together to do. We use the game as a focal point. We use it in a lot of superficial ways, frankly, to our bigger mission. If we do that, in the end, all the kids will be winners, all the mentors, I think, we'll be winners. Our country will be winners. And this may sound like too long a vision out there, but 5, 10, 15 years from today, as we face more and more critical global crises, we'll know that we helped prepare for it if we all act the way FIRST has consistently, now for 14 years, has celebrated. We have a video. I'm supposed to put a little bit more substance to the game this year. And in particular, over the years, as we've made this game more sophisticated, it got a little too complex. This year, I really think you're going to see, in the two things I'm going to show you now, you're going to see in the video, that we have raised the sophistication rather significantly, but I hope have lowered the complexity of being able to get out there quickly with a chassis that can work, with transmissions that will work, and if we you'll see it in the video. Again, it's hard for me to try to speak to so many different people with so many different messages and keep this thing going. I will just beg, is not a strong enough word for me. I will beg all the participants, particularly our mentors, to spend the next 6 or 8 weeks remembering what's important and remembering that we're trying to set a standard of professionalism for kids that's unique in the world, and in the process have some fun. So thank you for remembering that. Thank you for being part of FIRST. I know it's a lot of time and a lot of effort and a lot of energy done almost entirely by volunteers. 6,000 FIRST LEGO League teams, 30 cities and 1,000 FRC teams, and we have a little staff of 20-some-odd people here in Manchester. It's extraordinary. So thank you all for doing this. I hope you really all enjoy it. And although, again, we're giving you lots of sophisticated stuff this year, you should be thanking Woody and Dave and all the people that really worked extra hard this year to broaden the offering in this kit so that everybody everywhere should have a really exciting time and a way to win. Can we look at that video now?
New for this year is a gearbox designed specifically for FIRST. Allows multiple different motors to be attached to it and gives you a simple, easy to assemble gear train. First part is going to be to assemble your motors, putting 3 nylon washers on the end of the shaft as your spacers. Next, you'll need a 2-millimeter key that'll be assembled in the key slot of the motor. Next, we'll come to the gear that's going to go on the motor. You'll see in your instructions that there's an assembly alert that says that this set screw is too long and will bind inside your gearbox. You need to remove that. Next, you'll want to slide this gear onto the motor with the gear portion towards the motor. Then you want to take a 10/32 by 1/8 Allen screw, as per the assembly alert, put a dab of Loctite on it, grab your 3/32 Allen wrench, and carefully put that into your gear. Next, you're going to grab this little spring retainer, okay? Place the retainer on the end of the shaft, a socket, 7/16 3/8 drive, works pretty well for aligning to tap it on there with. Next, you're going to want to assemble your motors to your cover plate. Okay, set your cover plate on over your motor, grab your screws, apply Loctite to the thread, start your screw and grab your 5/32 Allen wrench, snug that up. Once that's snug, install your other screw here, then take your other motor and install it through this hole in the same manner. Now both motors are attached to the cover plate. We're going to take this bearing, install it up into this hole, and set this on down. Grab this shaft with this washer, noting that there is a step in this shaft. Slide that washer up over that step, install it into the bearing. Next, take the larger gear, slide it over the shaft, meshing into your motor gears. Your small pinion. One thing to note on this is you have a raised collar on one side of this gear. That's to ride against your bearing race later on. Make sure that's facing outward. Slide that on over. Next, going to go to your other shaft. Grab your shaft. Same thing on this gear. You have a raised collar. Have that facing the output side. Slide it over your hex. Slide your flat washer. Your bronze bushing. Your bearing. Take that assembly. Tip this up. And slide this right into here. Slide your box cover over. And there we go. Now we got to install the screws. Installing the last screw. Once that one's in, then we'll go ahead and tighten them all up. Next, we want to install our chain sprocket. It's going to involve the specially made collar. You slide it on over your shaft. Take your shaft key. Take your sprocket. Slide it all the way up. Grab your washer and your screw. You want to put Loctite on the screw. Grab the Loctite. Take your 8mm wrench. Nut that up. Next part you're going to want to do is put your base plate on. Put the plate in place. And now the gearbox assembly is complete. And there are no parts left over. And we're ready to move on to the next portion.
The first step to build the drive system is take the wheel. We're going to take these hubs and put them on each side. The wheels, you'll need to press in a bearing, which we've already done here. Once we have the hub in there, we're going to take a pair of screws with our sprocket. We'll use these for an alignment, put them in the holes, get it aligned, and then start driving them in with the Allen wrench. And then, voila, one completed drive wheel. All right, we're going to put the wheel aside for now, and then now we're going to focus on building the chassis. The chassis, you can make a long chassis or a wide chassis. What we're going to do is one that is actually long and then fairly narrow. So, we'll take the end pieces, put them in the chassis frame. Everything is pre-drilled, and you can refer to the manual for the exact instructions on building the chassis frame. And so now we're putting in the last of the 24 screws that holds our wheel assembly together. And again, here it is, the completed device. Each one secured by a number of screws with the bolts on them. We've got a great solid frame here. You have the option of making a wide robot. We're going to make a narrow robot. So from the original piece that came in the kit, we made it a little smaller. This is now the front of our robot. We'll go ahead and line it up with our wheel bases here. Line up the back of the robot. Do that screw dance thing again. We've got 72 screws in our frame right now. We'll flip it on over and then bring in our gearboxes. In the center of the frame, there's one hole that's offset. That's going to mark our center, and our transmission gearbox is going to be centered right above that offset hole. What we're going to do is put the screws in, mount it up, break away, and come back with our gearboxes mounted. When we have the gearboxes, you don't want to tighten up the screws too much so that we can adjust them back and forth, and we'll use that as a chain tensioner. Across the top of the gearbox, there's a plate. You want to make sure that you cut it so that you're left with a nice symmetric piece that gets laid right over the top of the gearbox and screwed on in. And now the last step is to tighten up the chain. So just pull back on it and then use our screws to get the chain nice and tight. We've added this year's electronics, laid things out so that it's easy to get to for troubleshooting. At this stage, the 2005 chassis is ready to roll, and it's time for some accessorizing.
you don't get away without homework. The best way to grow first, as you all know, is get people to the events. Every regional should be filled beyond capacity. Now is the time to invite your friends to the regionals. Students, invite other students. Sponsors, invite community leaders. Mentors, get people in there next year. We want to double the size of this place. Thank you very much.
And now, please welcome the Program Executive for Solar System Exploration at NASA, Mr. Dave Lavery.
Thank you. Thank you all. Good morning. You've heard Paul and Dean and John talk a little bit about the vision of FIRST and how the robot is just the vehicle that we use to get the point across about what we're trying to do. But while we emphasize the vision and what we're all doing here, we also actually do have to pay a little bit of attention to the robot itself. And as we start to think about that, we realize that over the past several years, an enormous amount of effort has gone into designing the kit, the pieces of hardware that we give you to build your robots. But we also realized, in particular this past year, that we really hadn't done our homework quite as well as we should in terms of the other half of the robot, the software side. And we realized we didn't have the emphasis on the tools that we were giving you to do the software side to match the hardware that went in the kit. So we really put an emphasis this year, in addition to the new, very, very cool, very elegant hardware solutions that we're giving to you, an equivalent set, or at least the start of an equivalent set, of very cool, very elegant software capabilities. One of the things you're going to start noticing on the FIRST website as of about 15 minutes from now is a new link from the front page that will take you to a new software directory from where you can download all sorts of new software capabilities, the fundamental default core code that will be on available on the robot, links to new tools, new capabilities, new software modules that you can grab. We really urge all the software sub-teams on each of your teams to pay a lot of attention to that site, watch it, new things will pop up every now and then, and keep very, very active in that community and make use of the stuff that we're trying to give you. We also realized, actually, Woody and Flowers and I were having a conversation the other day, and he came up with sort of an interesting statistic. As the game design team went through our efforts over the course of the past year developing what you're going to see today, we estimated that each of the members of the game design team, Woody, Vince, myself, the staff at FIRST, everyone else, probably put in about 400 to 500 hours each into the effort of designing what we're giving you. We're sort of really proud of that number. We thought that was really pretty cool. And then I sat there and said, wait a minute. Yeah, we put in 400 or 500 hours each, but do you realize over the course of the next 6 weeks, there's going to be a combined total of about 4 million person hours of thought going into disassembling everything we've created and analyzing it? Holy crap. We can't stop what we're doing. You know, yeah, the 400 hours is cool, but we better do some more. So our efforts didn't stop literally until about the last 24 hours. We've been pushing to get new things created, and I want to tell you about one of them that's really very cool. Literally just a few hours ago, a day ago, we were able to make an arrangement, a very generous arrangement, with Microchip Corporation, who has basically said that every single FIRST team is going to receive a complete, fully functional, non-crippled version of their newest C compiler. In fact, it's so new, it's not even out and available yet. Nobody else is going to have access to this. You're going to be able to go for the next 2 weeks to the Microchip website. We'll give you in the documentation a special web URL to go to. It'll be linked to from the software page that I mentioned. That will allow your team to go and download the newest Microchip compiler for free. It is a full release version. Part of the cost of doing this is sort of an ethical one. You know, obviously, the message of FIRST is all about gracious professionalism. This is something that Microchip has volunteered and made available to all of you. The one restriction they asked is that this is for FIRST team and for your use on a FIRST team for the development of this robot only. is a full version. Please limit your use of their very generous contribution to just your first team. Do not distribute it beyond your team. Do not pass it on. But it's there for the next 2 weeks. Believe me, your software teams the next 2 weeks are going to need that compiler. The newest things that are in it, for example, the two big things we heard requested most frequently last year, brand new math libraries and brand new I/O libraries that are fully functional and fully capable. So software guys, have at it. You're going to have a lot of fun. If for any reason you don't get it in the next 2 weeks, after that you'll be able to get it either from Innovation First or from First via CD by request if you need it. But you've got 2 weeks, so go ahead and have at it. Let's talk about another capability that we decided to add in. We talked a little bit about the vision of FIRST and what they're doing. Let's go over here for just a second and talk about what real vision is all about. Last year I mentioned when I was up here that we had a new IR sensor, infrared sensor, that we're asking you to use. And a lot of you did make use of it, some of you didn't. We sort of gave you a hint that you might want to start to understand how remote sensing capabilities work. It might be important. So go over here and take a quick look at this robot. One thing I'll just point out, well, the hardware of the robot is, you just saw the transmission, the chassis design based on a two-wheel drive system. Here's another two-wheel drive configuration, but with a third idler wheel in the back. It's a neat alternate configuration that you can build out of the kit. But more importantly, up here on top is this neat little thing that, as I walk back and forth, sits here and happens to be latched onto a nice brightly colored object. And is able to track it pretty well. But it's not just that. Basically, what it's also able to do completely autonomously is follow and navigate and track to that brightly colored object and keep it in its field of view. It's a neat capability. It's called CMU-CAM2. It's in every one of your kits. The software interface is in there. You tell it, find red, find green, find blue, drive to it, and it does it, and all the software build is there. And it'll just keep on doing that, and you've got that full capability in each of your kits. And this does get kind of annoying after a while. So, I'll have our own version of a wardrobe malfunction here. And let you pay attention to this. And you'll keep watching this for a while. The other thing that's going on is, let me draw your attention to this machine over here. Again, real quickly, is another hardware configuration. A four-wheel drive system built out of the same kit parts, just the addition of a little bit more chain and two more sprockets, and all of a sudden you've got a full four-wheel drive system. Let me just take a tangent at this point, and I really want to thank all the folks at Innovation First and Paul Capioli and John V. Noon for the enormous effort that they put into designing the transmission, designing the chassis system, and giving you guys a really, really neat set of tools. But let's look at what the robot is able to do. I'm just going to turn it on here. And one of the things this robot is able to execute is a whole new suite of software that's basically been built into the kit of software that you guys are getting. There's something in the software kit called a PID controller. Now, without getting into all the details if you don't know that, basically what it allows you to do is set a parameter, anyone you want, velocity, position, whatever, and it'll home in and home on that parameter automatically. And if things disturb it, you've told it to drive a certain direction, and it gets bumped, it'll self-correct. It'll understand that as long as I can measure what that parameter is and measure where I am, it'll keep homing in on that thing. That's in there. Your PID controller is already built. Sensor code, encoder code, it's already built for you in the kit. Gyro code, you want to drive a certain direction, but you're worried if I get bumped, I might have to know it. Well, you can basically tell the robot, head in a certain direction, and if you get bumped, pick up the heading again by yourself. It's all in the software toolkit. It's all there. And now here's the coolest part. We know autonomy is hard. We know artificial intelligence and making robots able to act on their own is a very difficult thing. It's so difficult, in fact, that in FLL we ask 8th graders to do it. But one of the neat things that they have is a set of tools that make it very simple. It's an advanced technology. It's a complex thing, but the interface to that complexity is a nice user interface. You just saw this robot follow a neat little path. Nobody was driving it. But the neat part is, unlike every previous year, if you wanted to have a robot follow that path and stop right here next to me, you would have had to have your own encoder loops, you would have had your own sensors that either counting gear teeth or to know where it was, and direction or gyro encoders with very, very difficult, complex instructions. This robot followed a very simple text script. The text script said, in English, drive 1,500 millimeters, wait. Turn pi over 2 radians, wait. Drive 1,000 millimeters, wait. English that you can understand. Kevin Watson and Rich Petras at the Jet Propulsion Lab have spent some time understanding that the way we should be talking to robots is the same way, for example, we talk to the Mars rovers. In simple scripted commands, what you're going to find is that new scripting language in your software toolkit. Oh, and by the way, if you don't like the fact that you're limited to just drive and wait and turn and maintain heading commands, the language is extensible. Write your own new language. Add to it. We couldn't figure out, for example, what things you might put on top of the chassis, but we knew they'd be cool, and they'd probably be a little bit unique. So add your own commands. And you might want to think about, well, gee, I just created a really neat, cool command. Maybe I want to share it with somebody, see if they can make it better. So, Brandon Martis, I'm going to apologize for what I'm about to do to you. There's a programmers forum on the Chief Delphi website. I urge every single team to start to access that website. We're giving you a problem. We've done a lot, but we also figured out that you guys as a community probably want to start sharing this information. We're not going to tell you specifically how to make that sharing happen, but I recommend you go on to the Chief Delphi Forum Programmers Forum and start talking to each other about how to share code. And actually, you can share scripts, these very simple pieces of commands to let your robots do what they want to do. It'll be a lot of fun to see what happens. And the neat part is, we've made autonomy very straightforward, very simple, so that even the non-programming community can have access to it and just write a script to make the robot do stuff during autonomy. Okay, you've heard about some of the bits and pieces that are going on here, some of the hardware, some of the software. What I want to do now is just toss it back to Blair and talk about taking a step back and understanding what the whole package really is supposed to be. Thanks very much.
And now, please welcome the first national advisor, Woody Flowers.
So what do we have so far? We got some new goals, new game pieces, got some really fancy new machinery, wonderful new software and sensors and instruments. So what are we going to do with it? Well, the first thing we're going to do is repeat the thank you to the suppliers at first, because it's really a big deal to be a supplier at first down. 1,000 kits, over 300,000 items, about 100 pallets left from Manchester, not including the stuff from IFI, Innovation First and the pneumatic suppliers. So it is a really big deal, and we really appreciate what they've done to make this happen. Is it all worth it? You bet it is. I think it is on many dimensions. In fact, we want to use the kickoff to make sure that, in particular, the new folks understand. You know, we could have just put up a URL and said, go download the manual and not done any of this, but there was a time when we spent a whole day. We had representatives from all the teams in a room at one time, and we talked and communicated a lot. We're too successful to do that now. So while we're in kickoff mode, we want to use that time very selectively. And all of us are talking a lot more to the rookies and the first-time firsters, because it's important that you understand why this process is kind of the way it is. So I really want you to listen for a minute. And I'll start by making an aggressive comparison. Last spring, I happened to see a television show that was produced by Tom Friedman, sponsored by the New York Times and the Discovery Channel. It was called The Other Side of Outsourcing. The scene was a group of 10 and 12-year-old kids in a special school outside Bangalore, India. The school had been founded by a man that was born in India, came to the United States, did well in Silicon Valley, went back and started this special school. These kids are from the Untouchable caste. They had, for example, never seen a flush toilet before they came to that school. They were sitting at computers, typing faster than Tom Friedman could. They were using Word, Excel, PowerPoint. When he interviewed them, they said, I want to be an astronaut, I want to be an engineer, I want to be a scientist, I want to be an author, I want to be a poet, I want to be a musician. They were excited, energetic, really courteous, outstanding command of English. They were just delightful. On the other hand, last summer I happened to be behind the one-way mirror in a focus group in the suburbs of Boston. There were 16 teenage males from wealthy families. They were discourteous, uncommunicative, and as far as I could tell, completely ambitionless. I was embarrassed and kind of scared for them because they didn't get it. They didn't yet understand that they were competing with those kids in India in the please choose me in the world game. You're not going to be asked to be part of the world game if you're sullen and uneducated and lazy. The same thing applies not just to the western suburbs of Boston, but in Brazil, in Mexico, in the Mideast, in other parts of the United States, in Canada. The village is very large now, and you're part of a very large game. Now let me make another comparison that's really nice. Several presentations this year, I have honestly told people that in the pits at the championship last year, there were more happy people per square foot than I've ever seen anywhere in my life. I think that's really wonderful. First, folks rock. So congratulations to those that have chosen to be part of this process. It's likely to be quite important to you. This thing that we're about to tackle is a really good thing. Now, several people have said that FIRST is not just about the robots, and it's absolutely true, and we spent quite a bit of time trying to make sure that we have something that works for you. So let me talk about a few features of the game this year and explain why. We do have alliances again this year. On purpose, because they're randomly chosen alliances, so if you work with someone in one round and they're an opponent in the next round, you get to know people in a very interesting way. You're nice to them. Again this year, you will work with folks, and that's an incredibly good way to get some insight about what other folks are like. Scoring, it will be very important to win a round. It also will not be to your advantage to completely trounce your opponent. We're doing that on purpose because I personally think there's quite enough testosterone poison, chest bumping stuff out there. FIRST is not like a violent video game. You know, I believe that a major part of society is running like lemmings to the sea. We're not. We're pulling in another direction. So if you want to join the lemmings, FIRST is not for you. Now, FIRST is not violent, but it is tough. I think there's a reasonable chance that this will be the hardest thing you've ever done, and that's on purpose. This is not a sticky sweet thing. But if you do this well, when you leave a FIRST event, you'll have a very strong sense of pride, justified pride. Sure would have been wonderful if we could have had the robots throw those Tetras, right? Oh, they could have done this nice thing. Well, we wanted to do that, but we thought quite a lot about it. 1,000 teams, 25,000 people. Tetras weigh about 9 pounds. Somebody would have made a mistake. Some stored energy thing would have probably misfired and maybe hurt someone. So, safety is a really big deal. It's all kinds of safety. You know, we now have a volunteer screening program, which we must take seriously. In all aspects of FIRST, be very careful and help us keep this thing on track. this year, as you've heard, the machines are complex. Now, we hope we've made the complexity somewhat accessible. We've really tried. But I think that's important. It was done on purpose. You know, again, the robots are big, vast, pneumatic, digital, very powerful, electromechanical. Done that on purpose. I think I can make an honest guarantee. If you understand your robot at the end of the season, somebody will happily pay you to exercise that knowledge. If you understand your robot and your team at the end of the season, then you'll probably get a special role in the world game, but that's the more sophisticated thing. If you understand your robot and your team and some more about yourself, then you're probably going to be in the big league. Because, for one, you'll have some sense of your personal ethics. I think ethics have to come from inside. Somebody can't tell you what they are. They require a lot of thought. They're difficult to understand. So, this year, ethics play a major part in a feature called the fix-it window. We're very aware that it's merciful that we limit the build season. We try to constrain how much time you can spend on the robot. Also want to make sure you get a chance to fix something that breaks and maybe make an improvement while you're at an event. And we don't think it's quite fair that teams that go to a whole bunch of regionals get to work on their robots a whole bunch of time. So we have tried to craft a set of rules that govern those things so that things are reasonably level. In order to make sure that we're all playing by the same rules, when you arrive at an event, at inspection, your head mentor and your team captain will be asked to sign a disclaimer that says we have obeyed the fix-it window rules. So please go to that section and make sure that you understand it, and that'll give us all a bit more level playing field. This game will be strategically intensive. When we were gathering information from folks about last year's game, Dr. Joe Johnson says, look, just make sure you make the game interesting. So we took that to heart and we tried. I'll be very impressed, for example, if anyone can drive the robot and decide what the strategy ought to be at the same time. Because there's going to be strategy within a team. There's going to be strategy within an alliance. There's going to be strategy within an event. What that means, I think, is that look at your team and find the people that are smart, that can think really fast, and be real nice to them, because you need them. So, the things that are reasonably level, everyone has the same constraint on size, weight, power, energy, time. Completely unconstrained is creativity and gracious behavior. You know, first is, I think, kind of like bling bling for the brain. I think you're going to have a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of pleasure. But if you do it well, you'll experience satisfaction. And I personally believe that satisfaction trumps pleasure every time. Better chance of a meaningful life if you gain access to satisfaction. Now, over the last month or so, Dave Lavery has been heating his house, running 3 G5 Max about 24 hours a day, rendering his version of this year's game. I think we ought to see it.
Welcome to the 2005 first competition. This year's game is known as Triple Play. The game is played on a 27 by 54 foot rectangular field. Large triangular goals are placed around the field in three rows of three. Two alliances, each made up of three teams, occupy the ends of the field. Human players stand at the corners of one side of the field, ready to move game pieces out and hand them to the robots. The game is played with tetrahedral-shaped objects known as tetras. Points are scored by placing tetras on top of goals and making rows across the goals. At the beginning of the game, special vision tetras are placed out on the field. As the game starts, robots can knock Tetris away from the corner goals to score a few points. More advanced robots will use onboard vision systems to recognize the vision Tetris, move out, pick them up, grab them, and place them on goals for extra bonus points. At the end of the 15-second autonomous period, bonus Tetris are awarded and human players step forward to take control. Robots will drive up to automated loading stations where they can grab Tetris and enter them into play. Alternatively, robots can drive up to manual loading stations, which will allow a human player to step off a pressure pad sensor, disabling the robot, and then load it up with the Tetra. Once the human player returns to the pressure pad sensor, the robot is re-enabled and they can deliver their Tetras. Human players must remember that robots are disabled whenever they leave the pressure pad. Once the robot grabs a Tetra from the loading station, he can leave the loading zone and place it immediately on a goal. Tetris may be placed on any goal anywhere on the field. While a robot is attempting to place a Tetra, opposing robots may play defense, block their efforts, and even keep them away from certain areas of the field. Here the blue alliance spots an opportunity to make the road. They run to the far end of the field to place a Tetra on a goal and then head back for home. The red alliance immediately counters by placing a Tetra on the center goal, eliminating the blue row. Teams will have to pay attention to the center of gravity of the robot as they lift heavy objects and drive rapidly around the field. As the end of their match approaches, robots will hit for their end zone. Teams will get bonus points for getting all three of their robots behind the end zone line. Teams are awarded 3 points for each Tetra placed on top of a goal. They receive 1 point for each Tetra on the floor in the base of a goal. Each row of Tetras placed on top of goals receiving bonus, and having all three robots behind the end zone line receives a 10-point bonus. In this case, red wins 64-60. Good luck, and we'll see you at the competition.
Thank you very much.
My participation once again.
Fantastic.
Thanks.
So, you've seen Dave's animation. Let's now run a simulation that may be a little bit closer in some ways to what the teams would do. We've got some dynamite-looking robots and human players out here. They've been counseling, and the alliances know what they're going to do. So, you guys take your places. Now, as you noted, there are vision Tetras, and we have to find out where they're supposed to be. So, Dave?
All right, let's randomly draw some numbers from a hat, and let's pick positions number 4 and number 6.
Okay, so 4 and 6. So while we're placing those, Dean, why don't you set up what the human players are doing?
The three human players, one associated with each robot, is standing on a pad, which is actually an electronic switch. If they get off that switch, their respective robot stops, cannot move. They're not allowed to get off that switch until their robot has gotten into one of these locations. Then they're allowed to come off the switch. The robot's disabled. They can put their Tetra on the robot and as quickly as they safely can, get back on the switch. Their robot is now alive again, and off they go.
Okay, thanks, Dave. Now, Dave, are these right?
These in the right position for this game. Basically, each side of the field is a mirror image, so neither alliance has an advantage based on position. You both got the same position in the Tetras, but from game to game, it's a random determination of where these things are located. Might become sort of important to be able to, see the Tetras.
Okay. Now, for this simulation, it seems like we should run this in an odd way. You know, we'll run the autonomous mode and then stop and kind of see where we are. Then we'll run part of the human control part, look again. But let's get to know the robots that we have here. Red number 1, nice looking manipulator you got there. I see you're not using vision, but good at dead reckoning, I'll bet. Mm-hmm. Okay. These flames, this must be a fast robot. Good looking manipulator. It's like you're really ready, and those are super vision. Yeah, you're ready to see. Okay. These boots look pretty heavy. Maybe not very fast. And No manipulators showing, huh? But good vision, I see. And they gave you the Tetra, and you're supposed to deal with that one? Okay, looking good. Red's laid out well. What you got down there, Dave?
All right, over here we've got one, again, really fast robot, but no vision, can't see, no manipulators, but he can run really fast. Over here we've got a second one, goes fast, two really great manipulators to hold the starting Tetra, and good vision capability. With those glasses, it better be. Third robot, again, fast, good vision capabilities, one really good manipulator. Woody, I think we're going to give you a run for your money.
All right, we're looking good. So let's run the autonomous mode, see how these robots do, and then check in. Everybody ready? One, two, three, go!
And here we go, autonomous period of the 2005 triple play. The little red robot that could drops one in the corner, scoring 2 points in the red zone. With 5 seconds remaining in autonomous, red two caps at center field. And 3, 2, 1, 0.
Okay, let's see what we got during the autonomous. Notice red number two came out, placed the vision Tetra, backed off with the manipulator. That means that red just earned 2 bonus Tetras. So on the end, we see the 2 bonus Tetras being placed. I don't know, Dave. Red's looking pretty strong. Look at this. We got a row. Got middle goal claim. What you got?
Not too bad, but we'll see. Okay. Blue missed getting this hanging Tetra during the autonomous period, so it's removed from the field at this point. So they've missed that opportunity. But they did get one up on top of here on this goal. They did score by placing one on the floor, the other moving the other hanging Tetra down. But it looks like two robots and their teams forgot to do a little bit of coordination before the match started, so we've got two robots from the same alliance fighting over the same Tetra. Probably not something you want to do a whole lot.
Dean, what did this look like in scoring?
Scoring right now is red 22, blue 4.
Don't worry, we'll catch up.
All right. Okay. So, let's run, say, the next 30 seconds of this fictitious match, and then we'll stop and see how things are going. Clearly, strategy is going to be important. So, 30 seconds. 1, 2, 3, go!
And here we go. All robots now under driver control. Blue vision robots break free. Number 3 for the red is on the pad. It gets a Tetra delivered from the human player station. Blue 2 trying to cap at the center of the field. And 15 seconds remaining. Blue 3 now being loaded by the human player in the blue zone. Red 2 at the center of the field. Blue 3 is headed for the end of the field. And with 5 seconds. And 3, 2, 1, 0.
Okay. Looks like things have changed a little bit. You guys seem to be coming on pretty strong down there. Dean, what's the score now?
Score now is red 16 and blue 20.
Mm-hmm. So we have lots of red down this end, but the middle goal has changed ownership. What you got down there?
And because that middle goal has changed ownership, we've been able to establish a blue row down the center line here for a 10-point bonus. And over here on the side, we've got a human player who's come off the pad, so robots disabled temporarily, and is handing off the Tetra. So we're well positioned to have another one out of the field as soon as we can get our human player back again and get the robot to start.
Okay, so it's pretty clear that strategy is going to be important. Things can change pretty quickly, so let's finish this in, say, another 20 seconds, and then we'll see what this simulated game is like. 1, 2, 3, go!
And here we go. Red 2 breaks free from Blue 1, runs into Blue 3. Meanwhile, Blue 2 headed for the end zone. Red 2 caps the center goal on the side. Red 1 trying to do the same. 10 seconds remaining. At the center of the field, Red 3, Blue 3, split up. Blue 3 heading for the end zone with 3 seconds. And 2, 1, 0.
Okay. Now, in this case, I think it was probably very important that this red robot got that up there and backed away. Changing the ownership of that center goal was pretty important, I suspect. What you got down there?
Well, we were able to get a row reestablished along the back row here, so there's a good 10-point bonus, and we actually managed, unlike red, to get all 3 blue robots back beyond the end zone line, so there's another 10-point bonus for us.
All right, so Dean, what did that mean in final score?
Well, unlike red, you have 36 points because of what you just said, and red has 48 and won this round.
All right. So we offer a simulation of some of the features of the game. Now notice, in this case, the human players were wearing safety glasses, will always be the case. Team 342 from Dorchester and Somerville High School in North Charleston, South Carolina, has helped us feature some safety. This animation was done by Michael Conroy, William Epperson, Ernest Kish, and Johnny Young. Check this out.
Even at rest, your robot is potentially dangerous. It can have four types of stored energy: electrical, pneumatic, springs, and gravity. Always unplug the battery whenever you work on the robot, and vent the pneumatic system. Be very careful when installing springs or surgical tubing. Always wear safety glasses with side shields. If you prop up the robot, make sure it's secure. If you're going to be away from the robot, remove the prop. Be very aware of dangerous pinch points, including arms and chain drives. Care enough to act on unsafe behavior from your teammates. Otherwise, instead of traveling to the competition, you might be making a different trip.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for that fast, funny, and informative first family game show, First Track. The game that points you in the right direction to the manual every time. Let's meet today's contestants. Our first contestant from Virginia is NASA's own Dave the Spaceman Lavery. Our next contestant is the guru of first, the professor who puts the GP in gracious professionalism, Woody Flowers. And our final contestant, the man with all the answers and all the questions, the man who started it all, first founder, Dean Kamen. And now, how about a warm welcome for our fabulous First Track host, Mr. Paul Shea!
Let's start with the first question. How many ways can I score in this year's game?
Four ways. You can put your Tetris on top of the goal. You can get your Tetris into the goal. You can get rows of Tetras, and you can get all three of your robots back to your end zone.
Nice job, Dean. We're off to a great start. Question number two. Do teams have to use cameras in the autonomous mode?
They can use cameras in the autonomous mode, but that's not the only way that they can score. They don't have to. But they also have the option of using the cameras during the teleoperator mode as well.
Good answer, Dave. Next question. Can teams do anything they want during the fix-it window?
Yes, there's absolutely no rules at all. Have at it.
Woody.
No. They may only do the things that are carefully outlined in the manual concerning the fix-it window.
That's right, Woody. Next question. Have the rules on additional electronics changed?
Yes, they have. There are many more suppliers available. Read the section on available suppliers. It's important.
That's great, Woody. It's all in the manual. Okay, next question. Is the design and build time the same as prior years?
Absolutely not. You have to entirely finish and ship your robot in 10 days.
Dave.
Yeah, it's still 6 weeks. Ship date is February 22nd.
That's right. All right, on to the next question. How do teams get more cloverleaf connectors to build more goals and gain pieces?
In addition to the set and the kit, you can make your own by cutting them out of wet sand, or you can order two different types from Innovation First website, which has a link on the front page of the first website.
That's correct, Gene. All right. What is the only way to ship batteries? Dean?
Securely attached to your robot.
In the overhead compartment or directly under the seat in front of you?
Dave. Pack the original container, secure it inside the plywood crate in the corner with the proper labels on the exterior of the crate.
All right, on to the next question. How do teams report missing parts?
Email first.
They check into the team information management system, which is linked to the front page of the first website, and they're very careful to make sure they complete the form by midnight this coming Wednesday, January 12th.
All right. Thank you, Woody. All right, next question. How do the teams get an answer to a question about this year's game? Dean.
They go to the FRC questions and answers link on the front page of the first website.
That's right. You can find all of these website links on the front page of the first website. All right, on to the next question. Are FedEx air bills in this year's kit?
Woody?
No. FedEx air bills will be mailed to every team in early February, and they will also will be included complete shipping and dryage instructions.
That's right. All right, another question. Where do teams send their chairman's award submission?
To Dean's house with a $20 bill.
This year, the Chairman's Awards will be submitted through thefirstawards.com. Again, there's a link on the front page of the first website.
That's correct, Dean. All right, and now for the bonus question. What is the password for the encrypted PDF file for the manual? Woody.
Dean's Social Security number.
George Burns and John Newman.
This is just like the real world. They tell me I'm wrong, but they don't even tell me what my answer is. I don't know.
Well, clearly, the winner is any team that really reads the manual and follows procedures. Thank you, Dean, Woody, and Dave, for your valiant efforts. With all the new features and the help available to you, it's time to start scaling new heights of creativity. We'll see you at the top.
I had no idea climbing a tetrahedron would be this hard.
Yeah, it's a good thing we've got 6 weeks.
Dave, you back there?
Yeah, I'm here. I think we're going to need like every minute of that 6 weeks.
Man, we ought to do this on another planet.
Yeah, I know. This gravity stuff, it's not just a good idea. It's the law.
Yeah, this would be a whole lot easier on Mars.
Okay, give me a hand, Woody.
Okay.
Boy, Dave, that Mars gravity would sure come in handy now.
All right, this is harder than it looks.
Oh,
thanks.
Wow.
We can see so far. I can see all the way to ship date on February 22nd.
It looks like an awful lot of really tired people out there.
Yep.
But they're excited.
And we look forward to seeing every one of you. Have a great season.